Time now for the Health First Show. Your host, regular host, Kathy Hart, is away this week, but we do have a couple of interesting guests lined up. Jamie Bella, who has created a company in the States that does organic essential oil mosquito repellents and such items like that. She'll be on the way at about 1:30 if you're listening to this show live. But first up, we're going to be talking with Kate Riom-Bleu about the vitamin K2 in a moment after Alan fills us in with the health news.
Osteoporosis patients who take holidays from bisphosphonate drugs are at increased risk for fractures, a new study finds. A six-year follow-up of patients who took a break from the bone-building drugs found 15% of them suffered fractures, according to researchers at Loyola University in Maywood, Illinois. Dr. Pauline Camacho and her colleagues said fracture risk needs to be regularly assessed during the drug holiday, and treatment resumed accordingly. Patients who take these drugs for long periods are typically told to take temporary breaks to prevent rare but serious side effects to the jaw and thighs. The study was published recently in Endocrine Practice. When loved ones develop dementia, it's hard to know how to make their lives better, but now research have pinpointed a way to help make these folks live as well as possible. Researcher Linda Clare, a professor at the University of Exeter in England, said while many investigations focus on prevention and better treatments, it's equally vital that we understand how we can optimize quality of life for the 50 million people worldwide who have dementia. In the study, her team reviewed 198 studies that included more than 37,000 people. Factors associated with better quality of life included good relationships, social engagement, better daily functioning, good physical and mental health, and high-quality care. The study was published online May 8th in the journal Psychological Medicine. In a new study, a widely used form of spinal surgery was no more effective than placebo in treating spinal fracture pain for people with osteoporosis. Researchers and experts now say the technique, called vertebroplasty, should not be a standard pain treatment for these patients. Dr. Nathaniel Tyndall, one expert who wasn't connected to the study, said the role of this procedure in the routine treatment of osteoporotic compression fractures is not supported. The new research was led by Paul Lowell of Elizabeth Tweesteden Hospital in Tilburg, the Netherlands. The new Dutch study included 180 adults over age 50 who had 1 to 3 vertebral compression fractures that were up to 9 weeks old. The study was published May 9th in the British Medical Journal. Babies go gaga over other babies' goo-goos, a new study finds. Researchers found that 5-month-old infants spent 40% longer listening to sounds from other infants than to adults making the same sounds. Even before they can create sounds resembling syllables, such as ba-ba-ba, infants can recognize vowel-like sounds and pay special attention to those sounds when they're made by other infants, the researchers said. The findings offer new insight into how infants develop their understanding of spoken language, what they bring innately, and what is shaped by their experience as listeners and as talkers in training, said study author Linda Polka, a professor at McGill University in Montreal. But Polka emphasized that it's important for parents to do baby talk with their infants, because little ones do respond to that interaction. The study was presented last week at the Acoustical Society of America annual meeting in Minneapolis.
And as mentioned, our first guest today comes all the way from, I believe, Victoria, Kate Riom-Bleu. Good day, Kate. How are you today?
Very well, thanks.
And you are in Victoria, right?
I am actually in the home office, which is closer to Hamilton, Ontario.
Oh, okay. And ND, so you are a naturopathic doctor, correct?
That's right. Graduate and former faculty member of the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine.
Excellent. Now, let's talk a little bit about your new, well, is this a new book that you've put out? It's actually a booklet, I guess you'd say.
Well, my current book is a full-length book published by HarperCollins, which is Vitamin K2 and the Calcium Paradox, How a Little-Known Vitamin Could Save Your Life. And it's considered to be a bestseller now. It's over 100,000 copies. As a matter of fact, the audio version just came out this week. So that's available if people want to buy it through the online booksellers on CD or download it from their, you know, Audible, these kinds of things. And that is, that's of course, continue to be my passion. And I'm considering whether the next book will be on my current topic that I've been lecturing out about recently, which is essentially aging well and how we can lower our biological age.
Okay, then I guess what I have is a condensed version of that in my hand. It is actually a booklet, again, Vitamin K2, Keeping Calcium in Its Place.
Yes, there is a condensed version of the book that may still be available from your local health food store if you ask, or they may have it on hand, or they may be able to order it in for you if you want to know more about vitamin K2 and you don't necessarily have time to read a full book, but you want to get the facts straight, which is important for anybody who is taking calcium or vitamin D or is concerned about bone health, heart health, prostate health, all kinds of aspects of health.
Well, I remember a few years ago the talk about how vitamin D was actually important for the absorption of calcium. How long ago was it that we realized this K2 was vital as well?
Relatively recently. You know, K2 was discovered in the 1930s, but then essentially overlooked or ignored for decades afterwards. And it's only in about roughly the last 10 years that we realized that, yes, it's, you know, vitamin D will absolutely help you absorb calcium, but once the calcium's absorbed, vitamin D has no control over where it goes. And that's the role of vitamin K2, is to take calcium and guide it into your bones and make sure it doesn't end up lining arteries and other soft tissues where it can be dangerous and even deadly.
And where do we get vitamin K2 from?
That's a good question. It's not that easy to get from our diet. So there's two main sources of vitamin K2. One is animal-based foods. Like, it's a fat-soluble vitamin, so we're thinking things like egg yolks and butter and the fat of animals, but more so when they've been out on the pasture and eating grass. So grass-fed animal foods, it's sometimes called the grass-fed vitamin. That's one source. So, your average store-bought egg, grocery store egg, would have a smidgen of vitamin K2 in it. You would have to eat about a dozen of those per day to get to a worthwhile amount of vitamin K2. But if you could get a grass-fed, pastured egg with a lovely orange yolk, two of those per day would be great. So another source of vitamin K2-rich foods are some types of fermented foods. So some, but not all, fermented foods. So certain cheeses, Brie cheese, Gouda, and Jarlsberg are very high in vitamin K2, as well as the Japanese fermented food natto. It's a fermented soybean food.
So fermented foods that are animal-based then, as opposed to, say, a vegetable-based fermented food?
No, the fermented foods are primarily plant-based. The natto is soybeans, and then there are certain types of cheeses that will be high in vitamin K2 because some bacteria will make vitamin K2 in the process of fermentation. Yogurt, as an example, doesn't have any vitamin K2 because the bacteria that make yogurt don't do that. But kefir seems to have a little of it. And again, certain cheeses are quite high.
Okay. For a vegetarian or a vegan, what kind of sources can they look to? You mentioned soybeans was one.
That's it. So this fermented soybean food, natto, N-A-T-T-O, mm-hmm. It's a breakfast food in some areas of Japan, and it happens to be the highest known food in vitamin K2. I absolutely encourage vegans, vegetarians, and even meat eaters to try natto, if you can find it at your local, say, Asian grocery store, and to develop a taste for it, because even just eating that once or twice a week, it's chock full of vitamin K2, and it's extremely good for you.
Okay. What are the benefits? Now, we talked about calcium. It's vital to get calcium into the body properly. So what are the benefits then having K2 in your diet?
Well, the big thing is that it will essentially help you benefit from the calcium that's in your body and in your diet and protect you from the potential downside. So calcium is really a double-edged sword. We absolutely need it in our bodies, but we need it to be in the right places. Of course, we want it to be in our bones and in our teeth, but if it ends up lining our arteries, then it can be very dangerous, or we can end up with heel spurs and kidney stones, and just calcification can happen all around the body. And so this is what vitamin K2 does, is to protect us from that.
Right. Do we as a society consume too much calcium in general?
I would say that we do, or at least to say that, we definitely consume enough, and we don't need calcium supplements in general on top of that. Calcium is something that's quite easy to get in our diets, as well as the body maintains a relatively high level of calcium. You need that for your heart to beat and for your muscles to contract. So it's really rare to actually be low in calcium. It's just easy to get in our diet.
Right. What about the magnesium connection there? I've heard many people say that we get plenty of calcium, but not enough magnesium in our diet.
That's exactly right. You'll find most nutrients have this sort of partner relationship. It's a sort of a yin-yang thing where they're sort of paired up, and there's one that's trickier than the other, and absolutely, magnesium levels tend to be low. First of all, we need magnesium for proper calcium assimilation and metabolism, but we do tend to be low in magnesium, and it's much harder to get from our diets. And so while I rarely recommend a calcium supplement for anybody, I recommend magnesium supplements for most people.
And how does K2 affect, say, magnesium then?
Well, this is relatively new information. So it turns out that when our magnesium levels are low, we can't benefit almost at all from vitamin D. So you hear a lot of people taking vitamin D in even relatively high amounts, but they still can't get their levels up. It's usually because magnesium levels are low. And essentially, if that's off, if magnesium levels are low, then the same thing will apply. Our body won't be able to benefit from vitamin K2 either. So those things sort of go hand in hand. And it is important for your magnesium levels to be optimal to have the most benefit from these nutrients.
So it sounds like K2 and D are very, very similar in vitamins in that they help with the magnesium or the calcium, but they also need the magnesium.
Yes, K2 and D complement one another in a number of ways. They have distinct actions, but they absolutely work together. And absolutely anybody who is taking a vitamin D supplement needs to know about vitamin K2, where to get it in their diet, and consider a vitamin K2 supplement. By taking vitamin D, you're essentially increasing your body's need for vitamin K2.
Okay. And I've talked to others in the past that say that in the northern climates, you basically need a D supplement because you can't get enough sunshine or other sources to get the amount of D that you need. Is that the case as well with the K2, that getting it through your diet is so difficult that you do need to supplement?
Essentially, because we have moved animals out of the pasture and confined them to grain feeding, grass-fed foods are extremely difficult to come by. And of course, in the winter in Canada, we're completely out of luck in that department. And the fermented foods that are high in K2 are also few and far between, and maybe we just need to do more testing, but the point is we're not taking in very much K2 in our diets either, or rather we tend to be low in K2 as we are in vitamin D, and there are multiple studies that show that.
Now, I work in the health food industry, so I see that there is, what at least my perception is, there's an increased demand for grass-fed beef, grass-fed everything. Is the demand gotten to a point where the industries are starting to change at all?
I'd like to think so, hopefully a little bit. It really, I suspect, would require quite a large restructuring of how we produce food, but it would be absolutely a very good thing for our bodies as well as for the planet. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity for smaller producers who are able to do the grass-fed, because it is healthier on a number of levels, not just more vitamin K2, but better profile of healthy fats, more essential fatty acids, a number of nutrients is increased in this grass-feeding process, plus it's delicious.
And I guess it's more the natural process of nature.
Right, yeah. It tends to be, exactly, it's the process of nature. You know, animals love being out on the pasture in this way, and the land is better off for it as we are.
Exactly. We're talking with Kate Rayon-Bleu about her new book, Vitamin K2, Keeping Calcium in Its Place. Be back in a moment with more on Health First.